serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our chance to visit with 96-year-old Al Bloomer of Fresno, California. He enlisted in the Navy at age 17 before the U.S. was drawn into World War II, and he's already shared some of the historic moments he was a part of on the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise. I can't believe it's taken us this long to get to the Battle of Midway, that pivotal battle in June of 1942 that in so many ways turned the tide in the war in the Pacific.
Well, we were trying to surprise them. You know, we sent out our scout planes to look for the Japanese. We were trying to find them before they launched the attack on Midway. Well, you know, you launch them and recover them and you launch them again and everything. But anyway, this one time we launched aircraft. They were flying in and they thought they knew where they were. They found some of those carriers, in which the story is that we bombed them. Yet our Enterprise, the two scout planes found them. And those two pilots, they put a couple of bombs on one carrier that really started the fire going on and it burned. So that put one out of commission. And then the other ones came out later. They finally knew where we were at. And then, so they sent torpedo planes and dive bombers to get this carrier. Well, the carrier was the Yorktown. It was a sister ship to us, built exactly the same. It just got back from the Coral Sea, and they put it together as best they could, and they put it to sea because they would need the aircraft to help repel the Japanese. Well, the Yorktown came by us a day later, and they were over there by on the horizon by themselves. Our task force was a Hornet, and the Enterprise was in another one, and we could see them over there, and they found the Yorktown first. They never did see us. We watched them attack the Yorktown and make runs on it. They were looked like they were just small toys, about an inch big. We watched them fly in, and of course we sent our fighters over to help them. And of course they got a couple hits on it. They got a torpedo hit on it. But the whole battle is that they never did find the Hornet or us. Well, anyway, they got the Yorktown going again. Well, they sent out another raid to get the other carriers. Since the Yorktown was underway, they thought it was another carrier. So they attacked it again, and it happened to be the same one. Here again, we lucked out again. They didn't bother us. They never did see us during that battle. We got credit for it, but our pilots did all the work.
But you're also seeing this, and I'm listening as you describe that. So you're, again, I mean, you had this perfect view of the Hornet launching the B-25s and the Doolittle raid, and now you're watching in the Battle of Midway the one American carrier that was sunk there getting peppered by the Japanese.
Right.
And you know that there are sailors just like you on that ship. Was that hard to watch? Does that disturb you?
Well, it kind of makes you mad, but, you know, what are you going to do? You got your job to do, and that's it. That's the way it goes.
We know now the significance of the Battle of Midway and what it meant in the bigger picture of the war. Was that evident to you guys when you left that battle, or when did you realize what a big deal that was going
to
be?
We didn't think anything about it, to be truthful. It's just one of those battles, you know, you're in and that's it. Never even thought of nothing about it. You know, you just do it, that's it.
So there at Midway, you lose the Yorktown. A few months later, I guess, what would that be? 4 months later, the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands, you're going to lose the Hornet. And you guys were hit by a couple bombs there at the Santa Cruz Islands, right?
Yeah, well, for Santa Cruz, the Battle of Guadalcanal was first, and then the Battle of Santa Cruz come up. Guadalcanal, that was the first big one. We was down there. We launched aircraft, as we do. During the whole time that we were down there, that's when they invaded it. Then we just cruised back and forth, launch aircraft, recover them, and do it like that. And about the next day or two, okay, here they come. They bring their carriers down, and we're going to have a big old battle. We were attacked about, well, probably 50 or more planes, dive bombers and so forth. You know, in those days, why they have that, we had like a bed spring up there for radar. Then we had some water-cooled 50s, but finally we got them changed. It took enough time to put some 20s on, but we still had the old 1.1s for that battle. We didn't have the 40s yet. It started off there, and here they come, and they come in forward. If they come in forward, they release the bomb, they're going to hit it in the after part of your ship. Well, they were coming in forward, so we knew they was going to hit the after end of the ship, the stern. And the first two bombs came and they went down about the third or fourth deck, and one thing exploded. And then another one, it hit that powder case there on that 5-inch battery back there and blew the whole battery up and the whole explosion. And it put all those guns out of commission, and I think it killed about around 35, 40 guys. Because remember, I'm telling you about how many takes each gun there? That's how many got killed. And it kind of warped the old flight deck up in a kind of like a humbleback. We finally got going on that, and after that, we survived. We never got any torpedo hits. We still could operate for a while, then pretty soon they told us to go back to Pearl there, get the replacement and everything. Well, that took a little while. After a battle, we always have to go into number one dry dock to repair the near misses, which blows in part of your ship hull and that for leaks. They never take the ammunition off like they did in peacetime. Everything's on there. And then we pull in this time, and they put those old logs against so you don't fall over, you know. And then he says, okay, now hear this. All ships, company crew, regardless of rates, are going to scrape the side of the ship. God dang, did you ever see how far from the main deck to the bottom of it on that little old 2x4? That's what it seems like. But anyway, that plank. And so we scraped that thing, and I was scared bad. I didn't want to use the word. But anyway, so we got it all done around 3:30 or so forth that day. And we was up there, and lo and behold, I went in, took shower, and was coming around. And pretty soon I hear, fire drill. I said, a fire drill? I haven't been to a damn fire drill in a year. I don't even know where my station is. Here at old Bunhope Force Division up on the floor, forecastle, want to know where their fire station is. Nobody knew where the fire station was. So here I go, and I said, okay, I'm going to go down to the hangar deck and see what's coming. I go down a ladder down, just about two decks down, and go down there, and I look over the side, and I see flames coming up. And I said, my God, what's going to happen? I said, this is a hell of a way to go. I said, here you did battle in a damn dry dock. And then some guy, sailor, walks by me. He says, oh, hell, that ain't bad there. He says, you should see back aft. If I see flames here, what am I going to see back there? Anyway, they got it put out, but we didn't have to redo the job. I guess they got the ship's company. But that was really an experience.
What started the fire? Where did it come from?
Oh, I don't know. One of the yard workers like that had a flame or something and caught a fire. I never knew. I never even worried about where it came from. I just, it got it out, that's all.
So then October 42, Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands?
Okay, we got repaired. Well, we got those new 40 millimeters. You know, those quad mounts. They could shoot 500 rounds per minute, and they put those on to replace the old 1.1s. We thought, well, it was good, and then we had the all-new 20s, and they added some on, put a whole row of them alongside of the flight deck, the side of the superstructure. On the side there, we used to stack up those boats. Okay, we're getting ready, and the old officer in charge of the flight deck said, get all those planes off that flight deck. Get them off. Well, there's someone we're on refuse. I don't give a damn. Get them off that flight deck. We don't want no aircraft on that flight deck starting fires and that. Pretty soon, they get a report, oh, they're 100 miles out coming. And then here again, they go, oh, 75 miles out coming in, getting 50 miles. Then they give us position. And here I am on this 5-inch, and they're kind of in the stern. So I'm bringing the old 5-inch gun around like that, and I look up, and here they come right at me. First two releases of the bomb, and they were headed straight for me. And I said, oh, dear OL, you're not getting out of this one. This is it. There ain't no way that you're going to live through this one. Those two bombs come down, and they just barely missed the splinter shield. They exploded. That raised that old bow up and shook it, and the water knocked me out. The water came down and brought me back. Made me feel I was shaking. And then what I didn't know, there was two more dive bombers coming behind it. One came down, we went off between the two gun galleys by the number one elevator and exploded down in the third and fourth deck and just cleaned that all out. The next one went out the side of the flight deck outside of the ship and exploded. That was the closest call I had the whole time I was on the Navy. The bow was taking on water down there where the percussion pushed in part of the hull and it was leaking, and they were trying to get it under control. But we still launched the aircraft and everything and repeat them, but we couldn't use our number one elevator. We were stacked by 83 aircraft that lasted 55 minutes, and they launched 10 torpedoes at us, and we dodged them all. That ship could turn on a dime. As big as it was, it could really turn. Let me tell you.
Well, it's a good thing, or else you wouldn't be here, and it sounds like you almost weren't here. First, Al, help us understand, when you're sitting in that trainer position, what's around you? Are you sitting in a chair with your eyes on this scope, or what do you...
They put open sights on it.
Okay.
Yeah, the director can't move fast enough to get dive bombers or anything.
Uh-huh.
It's just open sights still, and you just shoot the hope the hell that you hit something.
I'm just wondering, so just physically, as you're sitting there, what's around you?
Well, at first is a gun here, mm-hmm. and then right there is the sight of it, right beside you is where it's part of the gun mount.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And the sight setter, he's behind me up here. He stands up and works the sights for the gun on my side. And the pointer is on the other side. He's the one that fires it.
Right.
And they got the loader and the shelter on that side, too, and they load it.
So you're all in this together, and you see these bombs coming, what it feels like is right at you. And then you were actually knocked unconscious?
Well, yeah, I was out there. I didn't know anything until the water hit me. I guess so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this water splashes all the way up to where you are.
Yeah, it comes down.
You.
Yeah, it going out like that and comes down. The side of the ship comes that kind of out like that, and we just kind of like in a hole there. Yeah, but the gun sits out when they open. This air, also at this same time, it was kind of cloudy that day too. And this one time, this dive bomber looked over at him, and here he's diving at the South Dakota was on our starboard side. It real close to you. He released his bomb, and I seen him hit the number two turret and explode. It bounced off, exploded, and killed some guys on the bridge in that, on the South Dakota.
Well, and on your ship in that Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands, I believe I read about 44 men were killed.
Oh, yeah.
And then the same battle, the Hornet is sunk, and you guys end up picking up a lot of their survivors, right?
Oh, well, they transferred them. We didn't pick them up. They transferred some of them to us, replaced the ones that got killed on our ship. Yeah.
And another thing I read once about your ship, and I don't know if you saw it or if you heard about it, but because now in the Pacific, you know, the Yorktown was sunk at Midway. Now the Hornet is sunk in this battle. The Enterprise is the only carrier left in the Pacific. And I heard someone put a sign on your ship that said Enterprise versus Japan.
You're right, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, they showed it to us. After the Santa Cruz there, you know, there's a lot of happened there. They detached the battleships from us, and they went down there and doodled it out down there at Guadalcanal there. And of course, they thought that they all conquered, all destroyed and that. And then they relieved us. We went back to New Caledonia there to a repair ship there trying to get see if they could get the elevator working and patch up some of the holes that they could get reached to. The battleships, they went down there and they had that big duel with the other, and they sunk that one battleship down there, and the South Dakota and the Washington was in it too, and then they depatched the ones that the AA cruiser, 5-inch cruiser that the Sullivan brothers was on down there with them. All they were supposed to be is to protect us because of their thin hull, and that's when they all got killed down there. And so, one of the things, too, that we had brothers on our ship there, and they said, we're going to transfer. No two brothers can be on the ship at the same time.
After the five Sullivan brothers went down on the Juno?
Yes, that's right.
Well, I've got to ask you, Al, and I know this seems cliche, or maybe it's, you know, an obvious question, but I'm sure it's something that you considered at some point. When you're seeing all this happen around you, you're seeing these other massive carriers sunk, you know, guys off your own ship have died. How about you? Were you concerned that might happen to you? Were you afraid? What was your mindset?
Well, before your battle, you get that kind of a nervous stomach before, because you know it can happen to you. But, you know, after you once get started firing and everything, you forget all that stuff. You just do what you got to do and fire your gun and hope the heck that you make it. I don't know how to explain it to be truthful, but you always, you know, you always wonder about it.
No ship can match the record of the Enterprise?
No.
Do you know how many times your ship was reported sunk by the enemy?
Oh, no, a lot of times, yeah. They thought they had us, yeah. You know, there's some ships that are unlucky and there's some that aren't. And that's part of it.
What are some of the other things that you look back on with pride about your ship or the men who served on your ship or things that you yourself were involved in?
I don't know. You know, at the time, you don't think too much about it. Really, I never talked too much about it when I was young after getting out of the Navy because, you know, you never talk about it and never say nothing. Like you say here, you never say anything to your kids about it until you get old. And then sometimes it finally comes around and comes out. I wish my dad would have told me more about what he did when he was in the Navy. Believe it or not, I still have his old bulletin pipe. Still have that from World War I. Yeah, I showed it to the crew here. Yeah, I still have his.
Can you play anything on it?
No, I try. No, I have my good friend Wally. He plays it on it. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you know, you don't tell your kids about it, but something finally changed for you. What was it that convinced you that these were things you had to share, that you needed to get off your chest and people needed to know?
I think coming to this class was the biggest part of it. Mm-hmm. I really do. They don't want to really kind of get you going on anything. And hearing stories of other people. Yeah. Comradeship.
Well, Al, you're one of the last guys left that served on that ship. It was part of the Big E and its legendary exploits in World War II and all the close calls that you survived. I'm curious what's important to you that people know about your ship, for you, for the guys you served with, for the impact that you had.
Well, it'll never be another one. It's going to be now a completely different type of war. Yeah, it's going to be completely different. I see these big carriers there and I said, oh boy, a couple of those rockets hit it and there, that's it. But anyway, that's my opinion.
Is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm still here.
Amen.
Yeah. Hopefully, a few more years yet.
Well, we will all be counting on that, as I know they are in your Monday morning Stories of Service class in Clovis, California, which will resume meeting once the coronavirus coast is clear. Thanks again to Janice Stevens, who has led that class for nearly two decades, for letting us drop in and interview Al in a comfortable environment for him. And thanks to his fellow veteran, Olin Gray, who twisted his arm and talked him into sharing his story here. There are a few more memories that Al shared that we couldn't quite fit into our radio time today, but you can find those in the extended podcast version of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com. Thank you so much for listening to the program today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.